yesterday's prophecies, today's headlines. This is the Hal Lindsey Report. And now, Hal Lindsey.
Good evening and welcome to the Hal Lindsey Report. In all the years I've been studying Bible prophecy concerning the last days and the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, I've never seen so many of the predicted signs fulfilled. They are virtually all before us right now. However, there were four signs that I was especially looking for that were missing and not fully developed until now. First, the uniting of the European countries that are from the people and culture of the fallen Roman Empire. Second, the decline and fall of the United States as an independent sovereign world power. Third, the uniting of all world economies under a central control. And fourth, the movement to a one world government over all peoples and nations. In this Hal Lindsey Report, I will seek to show you that these four predicted events are rapidly being fulfilled, and that this indicates that the predicted miracle-working Antichrist is very near to being unveiled. These events are preparing the way for him to suddenly appear and take them to their ultimate fulfillment, his rule over the entire world. Remember, the Antichrist will be a charming, charismatic man with spellbinding speaking abilities. He will have a messianic aura about him that will convince the Christ-rejecting world that he is the one who will lead them into peace, prosperity, and the ultimate fulfillment of humanity's dreams. Here then, global government rising. One of the most stunning admissions I've heard from a politician in recent years was the one made infamous by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. When speaking at the European Union, she referred to the opportunities presented by the unfolding economic crisis.
Never waste a good crisis. And when it comes to the economic crisis, don't waste it when it can have a very positive impact on climate change and energy security, and that's what we're trying to do.
Management by crisis is a time-honored but seldom discussed method of government. It's seldom discussed because it entails the maximum use of fear in order to drive citizens to approve an unpopular agenda. The agenda under advancement, I believe, is the same one advanced by the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the International Money Trust behind the Federal Reserve. Henry Kissinger is a longtime Washington insider, a former Republican Secretary of State and Nobel Prize winner. He is considered one of the nation's leading thinkers on foreign policy issues. Kissinger now works behind the scenes with the Council on Foreign Relations. He wrote recently that he anticipates that President Obama will give new impetus to American foreign policy, partly because of the reception of him is so extraordinary around the world. I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period when, really, a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It isn't just a crisis. When a liberal worldview, a sympathetic media and global crisis come together in a perfect balance, a population, no matter how informed and how democratic, doesn't stand a chance against them. Such is our system as it exists today. Most of the mainstream media are sympathetic with, if not supportive of, the socialist agenda. Socialism is generally defined as the public or state ownership and administration of the means of production and distribution of goods and wealth. It also indicates a society characterized by equality for all individuals and includes an emphasis on an equal method of compensation for all. Ideally, a socialist society de-emphasizes industrialization and private ownership and emphasizes state-led economic planning. On the other side of the spectrum are the new fascists. Both philosophies emphasize the restraint of capitalism and free markets and the control of major corporations and financial institutions for the public good. They also depend on the subjugation of the individual to the state. In many ways, the two are so compatible that when you mix them just right, you end up with National Socialism, also known as Nazism. Under fascism and its emphasis on nationalism, the state is the supreme being. That's why fascist states have to abolish God. He's just too much competition. Under a fascist regime, private ownership of small business and farms is usually permitted, though the state may dictate the activities of the shop owner or decide what crops the farmer grows. But for a fascist government, state ownership of major corporations and financial institutions is a critical element. It must control the corporation to prevent the exploitation of the state or the working class by the greedy capitalists. Fascists need control of all elements of a society for the good of that society, so they say. In a perfect world, fascism would create a state where everything is dictated by the government for the good of the state and, therefore, its citizens. But in the real world, fascism breeds totalitarian dictatorship like that of Hitler, Mussolini, or Franco of Spain. Fascism takes root when that balance of worldview, media, and major crisis allows mass mind control through propaganda. Everyone might not necessarily want the change forced upon it by the crisis, but under the circumstances, it's irresistible. Does that sound familiar? Fascism and socialism are blending themselves into a new internationalism being advanced by the Council on Foreign Relations. The CFR is an organization that was founded in 1921 by some of the nation's most influential lawyers and bankers. It describes itself as an independent, nonpartisan membership organization, think tank, and publisher dedicated to helping its members better understand the world and the foreign policy choices facing the United States and other countries. Among its more than 4,000 members are some of the most powerful and influential people in America and the world. Put simply, their goal is to secretly devise a policy to advance their global agenda, then use their members' power and prestige to influence American foreign policy to those ends. I recall that in the 1970s, the CFR and its globalist agenda had fallen into such disfavor in the United States that it had to form a new front group to continue its work. Such was the Trilateral Commission, which was created for that purpose. Jimmy Carter and the man who later became National Security Advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, were instrumental in founding the Trilateral Commission. As a matter of fact, after Mr. Carter became president, his cabinet became known as the Trilateral Cabinet. But now we can see the impact of the liberal re-education program that were deliberately introduced into our entire school systems in the 1960s. Most Americans under the age of 50 have been thoroughly indoctrinated with one-worldism thinking. Organizations like the CFR can now openly push for the abandonment of our constitutional safeguards. They can promote the idea of surrendering our national sovereignty to an elitist group of leaders that will protect us from the catastrophic dangers lurking in the world. The CFR is now advancing a new program called the International Institutions and Global Governance Program, or the IIGG. And this is to assess existing regional and global governance mechanisms. Its goal is to identify several global issues that require a system of world governance. Thus far, among the dangers the IIGG has identified are global warming, remember that one? Overpopulation, terrorism, and the economic meltdown. No surprise there. Former member Rear Admiral Chester Ward said of the Council on Foreign Relations, "The most powerful clique in these elitist groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and the national independence of the United States." A second clique of international members in the CFR comprise the Wall Street International Bankers and their key agents. Primarily, they want the world banking monopoly from whatever power to end up in the control of global government. The program calls for reconceptualization of national sovereignty. It cites the EU's pooling of sovereignty as a model. But the CFR, which was founded and is still based in America, sees the United States as the major stumbling block. It recognizes that historically, the U.S. has been resistant to the ideals of global governance. Among the most important factors determining the future of global governance will be the attitude of the United States. In a direct attack against the U.S. Constitution, it continues, few countries have been as sensitive as the United States to restrictions on their freedom of action or as jealous in guarding their sovereign prerogatives. The program then states that the separation of powers, as stated in the Constitution, along with the U.S. Congress, stand in the way of the United States assuming new international obligations. The Chinese newspaper Xinhua covered the story. It reports that the director of the IIGG program is hoping that the Obama administration will seek to turn the page on what many perceive to be cowboy unilateralism of the Bush years by embracing multilateral cooperation, rekindling U.S. alliances and partnerships, and engaging in sustained diplomacy within the UN framework. The IIGG project itself stated in May of 2008 that regardless of whether the administration that takes office in January 2009 is Democratic or Republican, the thrust of U.S. foreign policy is likely to be multilateral to a significant degree. Among Washington insiders, President Obama's administration is being openly called, guess what? The CFR administration. I'll be back after this break. As I prepared for this week's program, I was again struck by the speed with which events are moving into the scenario the prophets predicted for the end times. I believe we're there. People on the street are talking about what all of these things mean. Folks that wouldn't darken the door of a church are picking up a Bible are now very curious. This may be our greatest opportunity, maybe even our last opportunity, to share the gospel of Jesus Christ before we're silenced by political correctness. The message that God has given me is more important now than it's ever been, for the church and for the nation. That's why I'm asking you to help me to expand our reach.
To support this program, send your tax-deductible gift to Hal Lindsey Media Ministries, P.O. Box 470-470, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74147. You can also support this ministry online. Visit hallindsey.com or call 1-888-RAPTURE.
And thanks for being a vital part of my team.
Back in 1950, CFR member James Warburg testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. During his testimony, he stated bluntly, "We shall have world government whether or not you like it, by conquest or consent." Warburg was in a position to know. His father, Paul Warburg, was responsible for creating the most important tool of global government ever devised, the Federal Reserve. Paul Warburg was so highly respected as a financier that he was tapped by Senator Nelson Aldrich to author a study on discounting commercial bills. Aldrich, John D. Rockefeller, Jr.'s father-in-law, was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. His committee was charged with developing a central banking scheme for the United States, ostensibly to forestall the financial panics that regularly plagued the U.S. economy at the turn of the century. The United States at that time suffered from periodic liquidity crises engineered largely by the financial community. The bankers argued that it was due to the rigid nature of the currency supply. In those days, in order to make a loan, the banks were actually required to have the cash money on deposit. The bankers argued that adequate money supplies could not be funneled in time to the industries that needed it most. Sounds sensible when you hear the bankers argue it, but the argument quickly loses weight when you realize its implications. Held up against the light of true intentions, here's what it means. We want to be able to charge you interest for loans made with money we don't have. So we want you to lend it to us for free first. To ensure that the population got the message, a series of currency shortages were engineered by those who wanted this lucrative central banking scheme. Since the entire banking system was not yet under a central authority, the panics were generally localized in predetermined geographic locations across the states. A large bank or group of cooperating banks would restrict credit to farmers and businesses. As a result, industries were often unable to finance inventories or farmers get their crops to market. Many went under. Such failures had a ripple effect. Grain rotting in the fields meant a shortage of livestock feed. Higher feed prices forced many livestock producers into bankruptcy. Fewer livestock producers drove the price of meat through the roof. Business failures often weakened other related industries. The creation of the Federal Reserve was a masterpiece of management by engineered crisis. The pressure on Wall Street caused markets to plunge, forcing smaller, weaker banks to fail. The destruction of the smaller, weaker banking competitors provided two benefits. One is the obvious. Fewer independent banks meant fewer but larger slices of the pie. Secondly, a small number of big banks are much easier to regulate or control than are larger numbers of independents. The engineered crises, therefore, provided a payday on several fronts. And after every one of these crises, there were fewer competitors and more brought out of the survivors under the control of the Federal Reserve. The bankers who engineered the crises argued that a central banking scheme would eliminate financial panics. They reasoned that all that was needed was the opportunity for the bankers to lend more money than they actually had at interest. Creating money in this way would enable industry to buy now and pay later when they realized their profits. Of course, for the scheme to work, there would have to be a centralized control of the banking system, which is exactly what they wanted. Paul Warburg was a German immigrant from Hamburg, Germany. He was the son of an enormously wealthy banking family. Early on, he was recognized as an economic prodigy. At only 18, he was employed by the London headquarters of the Rothschild banking empire. In 1895, Warburg married Nina Loeb, another offspring of a Rothschild-backed banking dynasty. In 1901, the couple moved to New York. He was immediately offered a partnership in his father-in-law's firm of Kuhn and Loeb, one of the Wall Street's most prestigious firms. Soon after entering the world of American-style banking, Warburg began to set in motion a plan for a central bank. Some conspiracy theorists claim Warburg was given marching orders to establish a central bank in the United States while he was still apprenticing in the Rothschild Group in London. There's no direct evidence to establish that as a fact, but it is plausible, especially in the light of the fact that the Rothschild Group had been attempting to establish a central bank system in the United States since the American Revolution. In 1910, Paul Warburg began working with Senator Aldrich on the Federal Reserve Act. it was yet another effort to create a central bank of issue in the United States. Even the name is ingeniously deceptive because the organization is not under the control of our federal government, and its reserves are not secured by anything of intrinsic value, just credits backed by fiat paper money from our treasury. The act was put before the House of Representatives on December 23, 1913, when most of the members of the Congress were home for Christmas. It passed without a legal voting quorum present. It was signed into law in their absence by President Woodrow Wilson. The act placed the constitutional power of Congress to regulate the U.S. economy into the hands of mostly foreign private bankers. After the vote, Congressman Charles Lindbergh told Congress, "This act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth. When the president signs this act, the invisible government by the money power, proven to exist by the money trust investigation, will be legalized. The new law will create inflation whenever the trust want inflation." It's not surprising that the first governor of the Fed was Paul Warburg, who was by then a naturalized U.S. citizen. Here's one of the most amazing facts of this infamous period of American history. During World War I, at the very time that Paul Warburg headed the U.S. Federal Reserve, his brother Max consulted the German Secret Service, and Sir William Weissman, a partner in the Wall Street banking firm of Warburg, Kuhn, and Loeb, was the head of the British intelligence. So members of the Warburg family ably played both sides of the street. Today, the Council on Foreign Relations, born in America, financed by Americans, comprised of the best and brightest America has to offer, seeks to destroy America and sell it into slavery under the domination of a coming one-world government. You talk about playing both sides of the street. The old game continues, but now the stakes bear catastrophic and eternal consequences. And soon, the last hand will be dealt. Each week on the Hal Lindsey Report, I try to show you how today's events are bringing to life the predictions of the ancient prophets. Like a watchman on the wall, I'm warning you that time is short. Christ will soon return for His church, and I want you to be ready to go. And I want you to see how urgent it is that you make certain your family, your friends, and those around you are ready to go too. Please help me continue this work and help me take the necessary steps to broadcast the Hal Lindsey Report into more homes in America. I need your help now more than ever before.
To support this program, send your tax-deductible gift to Hal Lindsey Media Ministries, P.O. Box 470-470, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74147. You can also support this ministry online. Visit hallindsey.com or call 1-888-RAPTURE.
You know, the God of the Bible is the only one who has a really realistic view of man's nature. There have been those who are utopian thinkers in all kinds of political systems down through history. But God showed His estimate of what kind of government He wants when all the way back in Genesis chapter 11, the first world dictator who brought the whole world under his government was under a man named Nimrod. This was rejected by God, and to make man spread into national entities, he confused the languages. Now, that's not just a fairy tale. God did that because He knows that in order for one man and his sin nature to well up and be corrupted by power, because we know that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, In order to keep that from happening, he wanted to split up the world governments into national entities so all of them couldn't be taken over at one time by one leader. But man's been trying to overcome that ever since. And now we have the idea that an elite group of men can overcome all the problems we face and can somehow keep us at peace, be able to deal with all of the big problems like climate change, which I don't believe is being caused by man. Scientific evidence shows it's being caused by solar activity. But any cause big enough can be used by this group, they feel. And I just believe that none of these things are going to work because the nature of man is corrupted from birth. God says there's not a good man on earth who always does good and does not sin. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 20. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And that's why the most important message I can close with is, how are you going to be made fitting to come into the presence of holy God? Well, God made it possible because he stepped out of eternity into time in the person of his Son, Jesus Christ, and died in your place to purchase your pardon. And if you will just admit that you're not good enough for God to accept, receive that gift of pardon, you'll change your eternal destiny. There's only one that's ever going to bring peace to this earth, and that's when Jesus Christ comes back and puts it under new order. God bless you. And God willing, I'll see you next week.
You've been watching the Hal Lindsey Report. To support this program, send your tax-deductible gift to Hal Lindsey Media Ministries, P.O. Box 470-470, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74147. You can also support this ministry online. Visit hallindsey.com or call 1-888-RAPTURE.